Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
Just after 8 o'clock in the evening, 2 hours and 11 minutes to go. Jeremy Shaw back with us here in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre and getting ready for the run of the flag. Before Nick disappeared, he made the point that seemingly the combination that has lost out most since we went back to green most recently is the Mazda Motorsports number 55 car. It's only in fourth position, but it has dropped back a little bit, and the lap times are not certainly what Scott Dixon had put in at the front of the field, but then again, nobody else is either.
No, Dixie is absolutely flying. The problem for Oliver Jarvis is he's stuck behind Philip Albuquerque. He just can't get around him. Both of those two. I mean, the 0-1 car of Scott Dixon is pulling away gradually from Olivier Plat in second place. Plat is pulling away from the train of cars led by Albuquerque that also includes Jarvis, Pagenaud and Duval. So they've got that four-car train there. You know, the Mazda team did a fantastic job while it was out in front. But during that last round of pit stops, for some reason, they lost a bit of time and they came into the pits in first position, left in fourth, and that's where they are right now.
Is this a case, Jeremy, of a car that doesn't follow very well but leads excellently in terms of aero or setup or something like that?
No, I think it's just out of track position, and they lost time during that latest round of stops, and try and find out why, because their pit stops up until then had been sensational, because I think the 0-1 car was behind number 55 for a good long time, couldn't find a way past, tried on a couple of occasions to come in on a slightly different strategy to leapfrog number 55, wasn't able to do so. It was only finally during that caution period that the 0-1 car was able to do so. It could be that the 55 car took on more fuel than the others. And the number 0-1 in particular took on a little less in order to leapfrog it. That will become apparent as this stint progresses.
It's Jeremy Shaw back with me, John Hindhoff, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Mazda is sitting right up behind Philippe Albuquerque at the moment but can't make the pass. Here's the right Porsche into the pit lane. Shea, Adam, any resolution on that penalty? No penalty call?
Penalty is the resolution on that one. The Wright Motorsport Porsche with Trent Hindman behind the wheel. Having argued their case to IMSA, it was still decided that they had more people working over the wall than were permitted. So the drive-thru has been called. The drive-thru has been served. And Trent Hindman now rejoins a very dark racetrack where he is out there all on his own.
Right, so that could be very costly indeed. That will drop them out of the hottest part of the fight in GT Daytona. Pompelli come through yet? I'm not sure he has. Check
Lane
that
passed him.
Say again?
Everyone passed him. I believe Cat Leg is ahead of him on track as well.
So that's going to drop him down to sixth place then?
I believe so.
Right, okay. Well, that has been a costly mistake. No mistakes in the pit. It was part of our Porsche keys to the race and a Porsche team. Oh, dear me. Dear me. You fight, we said it at the start of the Michelin countdown to green, you fight so hard for track position to give it up. Obviously, there was quite a bit of discussion going on there. They fought their case. That's what your team manager's there to do. Present the evidence if you've got it. Try and work it through. but it penalty does stand. So Robichon from Monte Calvo, from Pompelli, from Gunn, from Legg, from Hindman now, as that 16 car drops down the timing screen. Let's start looking at the next set of pit stops. Philippe Albuquerque must be due in very shortly, unless he has sneaked in and out. No, he has not. He's had 20 laps under the wheels, but six of those were under the caution flags. So maybe a couple more laps to go, but he will be the first of the leading prototypes to come back to the pit lane. Battle in LMP2, Scott Huffaker. He's going to pit before Ryan DL. Ryan had a little splash about 15 laps ago, which puts him seven laps better off, but he isn't quite on the lead lap. And DL, not with the pace last time around of Scott Huffaker, about a second or so slower than the leader on track. Full dark now, Jeremy. This is where you find out if your headlights were pointing in the right direction.
Yeah, they'd certainly better be. And it's a wonderful time of the race at night time, I always say, particularly here at Sebring, where there's nothing like the same amount of illumination as there is at Daytona for the 24 hours. And everything stands out. You know, the brake rotors, you can see them glowing much more clearly. Any incidents out on track as well. You're not going to get away with it, even though it's dark outside. Here is a pit stop for that leader in LMP2.
Yeah, spot on time, I reckon. That's around about 23 laps, and that's the sort of lappery they've been doing. There's been a bit of yellow,
including the caution period.
Yeah, yeah.
Generally about 20-21 laps.
Correct. The last couple have had yellow flagship.
Since you have the magical ability to confirm the driving pattern, would you be so kind as to pull it up for the 52? Because if that was a driver change, which I think it was, Mikkel Jensen's helmet back behind the wheel of the 52 for PR1 Matheson. No, it's still Scott Huffaker.
No, it's still okay. Scott.
Because it's been Scott and Mikkel back and forth for a long time during this race, the last 8 stops have been bouncing back and forth between the two of them. Do they have enough drive time each left to make it within the 4 and any 6?
Ben Keating was last in the car. He got out at 25 past 2 in the afternoon. So that was quite a long time ago. That was 6 hours ago.
Yeah, so 7.5 hours to go in the race at that point, or 8.5. No, 7. 8.5.
Yeah.
So that means that between these two drivers, they're going to have to do 8.5 hours of the race, and they're not allowed to do any 4 hours in any 6-hour period. That's getting a little bit messy
and
for that.
That's why I've said watch the watch in our Porsche Keys to the Race here, because it's not just about getting Ben Keating his 3 hours. He's done that. He's over 3.5 hours, but it's when those stints come. He did a relatively long set of stint at the beginning. Did about 26 laps at the beginning. And then he... he did a bit more than that, because he did a double, what was effectively a double at the start of the race. And then he did another stint to get his time up, but he's not been in the car since then. So it's the 4 in any 6 that is catching people out here, Shea, rather than anything else.
Yeah, and for Ben Keating, the easiest way to look at it, he did 5 of the first 6 stints, and ever since then it's been Mikkel and Scott. But the thing that concerns me is the amount of time that was left on the clock when Ben got out finishing his final stint. We've got another situation like that where Spencer Pompelli and Andy Lally will be bouncing back and forth in the Magnus Racing Acura. Now, they do have the brilliant mind of Mike Johnson on the box for that one, so I'm slightly less concerned, but it's still those two sharing the car back and forth for what will be, what, 8.5 hours of the race from the last time that John Potter got out of that car.
Yeah, well, he got out a very long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
He got out. He's done his 3 hours. He must have done another. He did another stint. So he did a stint at the beginning, a couple of hours at the beginning, and then he jumped in again and got out at a little before 4 o'clock, 10 minutes before 4 o'clock.
Okay, so that's 6 hours to the end of the race for Spencer and Andy to share back and forth between. Yeah, so they should be okay. Yeah. But that 52 car, that's concerning me, and they are leading the LMP2 class.
Coming down to the last 2 hours of the race, all of these things in play. Porsche keys to the race was watch the watch. That's what we're looking at now, and being there in the dark. At the moment, the best car in the dark, undoubtedly the best car and driver combo in the dark, is the leader. 10.8 seconds now. Scott Dixon, Jeremy Shaw over Ollie Platt in the MSR number 60 Acura. This has been a fantastic run for Scott Dixon. Then it's Albuquerque and Ollie Jarvis still there, just about a second away from a podium position in that 55 Mazda, Jeremy.
Yeah, you know, it's been a great run by Scott Dixon. Of course, one wouldn't really expect anything different, would one? But he is a star. He's pulled out that lead now in, 12 laps to 11 seconds over the second place car, Olivier Pla. Yeah, the number 55, the reason it had a slightly longer stop during that most recent caution period and therefore lost those positions was the fact that the previous stop was a bit earlier than they wanted to come in because they had a problem with the radio. So therefore they needed a bit more fuel on the latest stop. That's why the stop was a bit longer. That's why they've fallen back into fourth position. And the bad news is they're just stuck behind Philip Albuquerque. I think the car is working quite well now. The radio problem that had caused that earlier stop has also been fixed. So that's the good news for the Mazda team, but they're stuck behind number 10. But of course, still, we're actually on 2 hours to go in this race now, aren't we? Just,
yeah. Yeah, as I threw it to you, Jeremy, we were going under the 2 hour mark. At the end of the race, the checkered flag finishes the 12 hours of Sebring, but starts our Michelin post-race tech. And that's where you get to control the editorial and tweet your questions, points arising, observations, or whatever you want to say to at IMSA Radio, hashtag Michelin PRT. Already beginning to get some questions in for that, coming in from quite early on in the race. Shea Adam hearing the bad news from Paul Miller Racing. That car's not going back out.
Nope, officially retired. When was the last time that Paul Miller Racing had a mechanical retirement? It's been a while for that.
Are we confirming that was a gearbox issue or some kind of gear selection issue at least? Here comes Philippe Albuquerque. Get back to that in a moment. Into the pit lane. This is the number 10 Acura DPI from Cunningham and Alta, the Wayne Taylor Racing Run team. And Shea Adam is watching this. The blue light on the top of the fin, making the identification a little easier.
Ooh. And per their rotation, it should be Alexander Rossi getting back aboard this car. We are under 2 hours to go. So you would imagine that this could be the last driver change that they do in this race. Well, it is Alexander Rossi getting back aboard this car, but I would expect Ricky Taylor to take it to the checkers. They are doing fuel and tires. Perhaps this is going to be a double stint for Rossi on this one and then a double stint for Taylor to go to the end. Interesting that Albuquerque was leaning over the wall there, staring at the right side of the car as if trying to see some damage on the car. I don't see any damage on that car, but I don't get to stare at it for very much longer because Alexander Rossi wants it back on the racetrack, and who can blame him?
It's been a bit of physicality throughout the field, some of it more controversial than others. Scott Dixon. All of a sudden, 13 and a half seconds up the road. Scott Huffaker now, only 45 seconds ahead of Ryan DL, but Ryan will have to pit shortly and make the stop that Scott did, what, four laps ago now? Three laps ago. This is the best part of this race, I think, into the dark. I love racing in the dark. There's just something slightly illicit about it, almost like you shouldn't be doing it. You're getting away with something a wee bit naughty. Fantastic stuff. Some drivers don't like driving in the dark, others love it. And that often is part of the tactics as well. New fastest GT Le Mans race lap, Matt Campbell in the Porsche of WeatherTech Racing, a 155.7, Jeremy, 7.32, a tad quicker than the 55.736 from Tonio Garcia, who's only 2 seconds behind Matt Campbell. Those guys trading tenths of seconds, but that is a new fastest race lap in this race. How does that look as far as lap times we've seen in the past from GT Le Mans?
Stomped it. The old record was Nicky Katzberg last year in November, 157.038. That was an average speed of 115 miles an hour, so they're going quicker than that now. Wow. What was it that time? 55.7. So that's 1.3 seconds quicker. That's astonishing, isn't it?
It really is. Jeremy, we've got a problem for Mike Conway, another problem for the Whelan Cadillac, seventh position, trying to fight to get back on the lead lap. They'd reduced that back to three, but that car has ground to a halt out of turn seven, driver's right, and that might cause a bit of a scramble in case there's a full course yellow. And indeed, the leader, Scott Dixon, is immediately into the pit lane. In fairness, he was due in anyway, I think, Shea. Yes, he was.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have made that much difference.
No, it definitely triggered a slew of pit stops, though, as far as the DPI category is concerned. Scott Dixon staying aboard that 0-1 for Chip Ganassi Racing. Also into the pits, we've got the 55 Mazda. Smart move there. Ollie Jarvis staying aboard that car. They are doing fuel and tires for the Mazda. Who else came in? Oh, Simon Pagenaud came in the 48, which we believe will be moved to the back of the class after the race for the drive time infringement, which Jimmy Johnson even admitted. We've got, that should be Kamui Kobayashi getting aboard that car, by the way. And Olivier Plot is into the pit lane in the number 60 for Meyer Shank Racing. He's been out there for a double, so I would expect Dane Cameron to be taking over that car once again.
Not coming in the Acura, of course, the number 10 car, which we just put Rossi into because he was in literally the last. We have a fire in the pit lane on the 24B MW, swiftly dealt with underneath the car. Looked like a fuel overspill. The driver change still going on. So that was a problem with the fuel filler going in, I think. Various other cars having to pull around that 24B MW. John Edwards brought that car in. Some consternation there was a driver change going on as well, Shea Adam.
Yeah, there was, and that was Jesse Krohn climbing aboard that car. He's gotten out of the car. It is filled with extinguishment, so that would be hard to breathe in that 24 BMW. They were running second on the track. Full course caution is out on the racetrack, by the way. That confusion that we saw ahead of the BMW, both of the Riley LMP3 machines coming in together, Jerome Bleekemolen taking over for Dylan Murray in the 91, and the 74 of Scott Andrews being pushed way back down the pit lane because well overshot its box as well. That was big fire.
Yeah, it was the fuel hose, the fuel nozzle going in, didn't properly connect and clearly spilled fuel over the hot car. But fantastic work, and that's why you have to have a fire bottle over the wall. That's part of the safety. There was also fire bottles being used from the other side of the pit wall. Excellent stuff from everybody there. Scary moment. Small bit of fuel can make a very spectacular looking fire in the pit lane. And they have now got the fuel nozzle on and the refueling is happening. That 24 BMW looking more like it's just come off the Dakar rally than round at Sebring. I thought I'd seen the note that the 31 car had resumed virtually the moment that the full course yellow came out, but if it has, it hasn't got very far, and Mike Conway is going to need some assistance to get back to the pits. So that 31 car, the Whelen Cadillac, brings to an end almost 35 minutes of green flag racing, and it's the seventh time we've been under full course yellow. Still tantalisingly close to the distance record. If we can keep it going. And what happened to Conway? Out on the far side of the circuit, going through turns 3, 4, 5 and through Gurney Bend under the drive over bridge, and looks to be just slowing down as if he's got no drive or no power and gradually just coasting to the hairpin. It's not been there, dear Jeremy, has it? The 31 thing really hasn't.
No, it really hasn't. You're right. It all started to go wrong badly with the incident for it was Felipe Nasr, wasn't it? Right after that pit stop, well, a long, long time ago now. They battled back really well. And then they had another drama, and you know, that looks like the end of that uphill fight for number 31 team. What a shame. Most unfortunate for them. Pipo Durrani, of course, a three-time winner here of this race, loves Sebring International Raceway, but it's not going to be that team's day today. Another note, by the way, on that number 55 car, the problem they had, the radio problem with it, they had was they'd had it for several hours, and there was a connector for the helmet system, and it wasn't working, so they swapped out that connector and it's all fixed again now. So that's certainly good news for number 55 car. And during this round of pit stops, they have managed to leapfrog ahead of that number 10 car that came in a couple of laps earlier. So that is certainly good news for number 55. It's up into third position now ahead of the number 10 car. And we'll see whether he can maintain the pace of the other two leaders, Scott Dixon and Ollie Pla, at the restart.
Jeremy Shaw in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Shea Adamar VP Fuel Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter. Sorry, I was grinding to a halt in much the same way as Mike Conway was there. Bit of a debate going on the picked up by the effects mics there. So inside the last 2 hours by 12 minutes, and should get the pits open shortly. The 24 BMW has dropped down to fourth in class, but is running and is now what's the car behind it? Is that the number 3 of Tonio Garcia? If so, he's dropped off the lead lap, hasn't he? Yeah, he's dropped off the lead lap in GT Le Mans with that flame out in the pit lane.
Did that burn the bodywork away from the right rear quarter panel?
Don't think so.
It just looks a little bit funny from the one camera angle that I was able to see. I'll have another look when it comes back into the pit lane at some point and has much better illumination.
Pass around going on at the moment. But you have to keep your wits about you even doing that, because there's track services vehicles trying to get rid of the shingle off the racing line. Right, Jeremy, if we start thinking from the end of the race to the beginning. It's ran about 40 minutes at the end of the race to now, rather. It's ran about 40 minutes for the DPIs, isn't it? Pit stop. And we've got 106 minutes. Let's see if we get down to somewhere near 90 minutes, maybe. 95 minutes. If we can get this done in 10 minutes. This is going to be really interesting about when people take pit stops and when they don't. Take a pit stop now, you could get down to about an hour to go.
Well, yeah, they've just made a stop, of course. They've just been into the pit, so I think two more stops should be okay, most likely, with this caution, depending on how long it is. Should be just two more stops, I would think, from here.
Kyle Tilley.
Fairly comfortable, I think.
Yes, Kyle Tilley got aboard the LMP2 number 18, second place car. On the last stop, it was Ryan DL that got out. IMSA Radio, live coverage, Mobile One, 12 hours of Sebring, presented by Advance Auto Parts. Hello to you, whether you're listening around the circuit on the PA system. Thanks, Tyler, and the rest of the team. 99.1 FM, WWOG, Sirius 216 XM 392. Gar Robinson, part of our XM audience. Some great pictures coming in at IMSA Radio of a variety of car dashboards with the XM Sirius displays on them. Thank you for that at IMSA Radio. And of course, RS2 is IMSA Radio. Every hour of every day, IMSA content playing out via the player live audio tab on www.imsaradio.com. www.imsaradio.com. While we've got a moment as well, I think I said this earlier on, but if I didn't, I must have thought it. Paul Marquardt is celebrating his birthday today. One of the collective, good friend of ours, hard worker as well. And big Tom Christensen fan. And I haven't forgotten about what we were talking about, Paul. Don't worry. Working with the big fella. And also, I did mention this earlier on, but one of our technical team, part of Tyler's technical team at the track, Keegan's birthday as well this race weekend. So there will be some celebrations once the hard work has ended, and they are some of the hardest working people at the track and responsible for getting our technicals at the track up and running. All the soundboard, mixing gear, connections to the PA system, timing and scoring, and video to all of the IMSA broadcasts that we do. So thank you very much indeed. Quick look before we, well, before anything else happens, as to what is going on in GT Daytona. I want to see if the Sun Energy One car and Mikhail Grenier has managed to get back on the lead lap. I think he might have. Where is the 75? Must be close. Must be close.
He still went very slowly through the first sector, John, which makes me think that he's in the safety car train.
Yeah.
Whereas Zach Veach, for example, in the 12, who's chasing up to the safety car train, one position ahead of him, was going very quick through sector one.
Yeah. I think what happened is Zach Veach got in before the yellow. I can possibly scroll back to see that. Can't quite get down as far as all, but you can. I think Zach Veach maybe got in before the yellow, which when this cycles through, if all the other GT Daytona cars come in and they're all The top three are in the 20s. Laps completed. Trent Hinman's in the... has just done 12 laps. Catherine Legg's 24. Yeah, Zach Veitch did get in just before the yellow.
He came in three laps before. He came on lap 270, I think. Came out of second position. And around about the same time, the Aston Martin managed, Ross Gunn managed to get past Spencer Pompelli, which therefore became the second place in the class because I think it was Rob McGillis who was driving number 12 at that stage before handing over to Zach Veitch, who will bring that car home to the finish. That's the plan. So pass for what became second place and the Aston in second place. So it's Porsche, Aston Martin, Acura, Porsche, Trent Hinman and Catherine Legg. This caution period is certainly excellent news for number 16, having served that penalty a little while ago. So this gets them very much back in the game. And then Catherine Legg also, and then Zach Veitch, as you say, still on lead lap. The problem for Mikkel Grenier is that the race leader was actually the top three haven't come into the pit lane. So that's why the number 75 car remains a lap down in GTD.
Did Veitch have to come in there, or did they... Was that a planned stop, do you think, Jeremy?
It's a very good question. No, he wouldn't have needed to have come in then. You're absolutely right. So, but I think he probably realised that from there they can get to the end on just one more pit stop. So I fancy
indeed
the number 12 car made that stop as soon as they thought they could get to the end with just one more pit stop. That's conjecture. Here, though, is the number 9 car. So this is going to get an opportunity for the number 75 potentially to get back onto the lead lap.
Shea Adam is watching the stop of the Pfaff Porsche, and they look like they got jumped in the pit lane by the other Vassar Sullivan Lexus.
They did get passed by one of the Vassar Sullivan Lexuses. I believe you're correct. I believe that was the 12, but that was a driver change. Zach Robichon out, Lawrence Vantor trying to take it to the checkered flag. There was also a pit stop for the Magnus with Archangel Racing number 44 Acura. That was Spencer Pompelli bringing it in. I think I saw Heidi Lally taking it over to take it to the checkers. In terms of Porsches, we've got the 88 in. That was Cat Legg bringing it in. It should be her staying aboard with fuel and new tires as well as a windshield tear-off. So a nice little treat for Cat. Who else did I see? Ross Gunn was in the pit lane, in and out, fuel and tires. No driver change there. It was Lally aboard the Acura, by the way. And Patrick Long saved the best for last aboard the 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche to the end. Can he do it 2 years in a row?
I can. Will he, though? that's the big question. It's big. Well, all kinds of stragglers trying to get back on the end of the safety car train. And we're getting the final wave by starting right now. So if you're trackside listening to us here on IMSA Radio and you can see cars going by, that's fine. They've had the wave by. This is the final opportunity for that to happen. Shea has an LMP3 class update. 7th and 8th for the leading pair.
I've just gotten a text message and made me quite happy because LMP3 has been Riley Motorsports pretty much all day, dominating with 47 hanging on. Well, guess what, guys? Core Autosport is back in this fight. They are on the lead lap. Colin Brown behind the wheel of the 54. What can he do trying to win Sebring for the third time in his career with this team?
Yeah, sorry. I gave you the positions of the leading pair in P2, LMP3. Yeah, absolutely. Colin Brown with Austin McCusker ahead of him for 47 Motorsport in the Duquesne. Spencer Pigott and Jerome Blakemolen, the leading pair, second and first. 91 lead, 74 seconds, 7 third, 54 in fourth position. Jan Claret, by the way, has now got behind the wheel of the Sean Creech Motorsport Ligier. He is a lap off that category lead. Are we ready? I think so. What have we got? 97 minutes to go. 300 laps completed. Ready to go back to green. Now's the time. If you've got any kind of pace left, there's no point in hiding it here. So, J just to confirm, by the way, that Zach Veitch pitted a second time during that yellow to top that car off. And so,
just a quick splash.
And that means that the tail end of the lead lap, back on the tail end of the lead lap, is the Grenier 75 Sun Energy 1 AMG. They were four laps down after the issues that they have had with inconsistent ABS and traction control. And remember, that car was in the wall, backed into the wall. Kenny Habul struggling with that car's personality, shall we say. And that was at turn seven. Oh, brilliant. Brilliant by the guys on the wall from Gradient to try and get that car fettled. And by the man at the head of Gradient, that's Andres, who's calling the strategy there. And they've used every opportunity possible. Can they win? Who knows? But they've put themselves in with a chance, Jeremy. And that's exactly what we were talking about in the Porsche Keys to the Race. If you're on the lead lap with maybe a pit stop to go in the dark, then you've given yourself a chance, a decent chance at that round here, because strange things happen on the far side of the track in the dark at Sebring. It's a bit like the front row of a scrum.
Brilliant, isn't it? And look who's leading in GTLM all of a sudden. Oh, he's not actually now. I guess he just came in for a splash.
Must have.
Yeah, I think maybe just came in for a splash on number three car, but he was shown briefly in the lead of the class. I'm quite sure why that happened.
Yeah, still still showing on my timing, but it'll update it again in a moment. Looks like we're going back.
I think it's right, actually. I think
you are right.
Yeah. So he's leapfrogged through there. That car was... They all needed a similar amount of fuel, I think, of the GTLM cars. I lied, because number 24... Where's number 24? Oh, 24 cars had a problem. The number 3 car was in at the same time as the number 24. 24 then had the pit lane fire, which was most unfortunate. But number 3 car then, when everybody else came in just now under the caution period, number 3 car also came in, but it only needed a splash of fuel. So that's why the other 25 and number 79 need a lot more fuel. Therefore, the number 3 car leapfrogged ahead of them, and it will be in the lead for the restart with just over an hour and a half remaining in this race.
Yeah, 93 minutes on the clock as they come down the back straight. So with the final wave by completed, are we going green this time around? It will be Scott Dixon once again, who absolutely nailed the restart last time. Yep, the C8 has disappeared and he's gone early again, coming into 17. That's another brilliant restart. Ollie Pla slightly caught on the hop as we go back green with exactly 93 minutes still to run at the 2021 Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring. And it's the bright green light on the top of the leading car, signifying that Cadillac of Chip Ganassi Racing. The purple light in second place is that of Ollie Pla. And then it's someone's out of place there. I don't think that's the Mazda with the green light on the top. I'll stand to be corrected on that. Oh, yeah, it is. I am corrected. And I am standing. Ollie Jarvis, Mazda. Well, you know me, can't commentate sitting down, not when it's like this.
The 24 BMW did get going, didn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It dropped one lap, Jeremy. Dropped off the lead lap, should I say. It's down towards the back of the queue of cars. It's actually got the Corvette Racing number 4 of Alexander Sims in behind it, which is another two laps further back in that battle for fourth and fifth. Why is the 24 showing has stopped? Is that just a timing glitch? Hopefully, yes. That was the car in second. Yes, Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah, big shuffle around GTD. All of a sudden, it's Zach Beach who leads the class in the Lexus from the Pfaff Porsche. And the Aston Martin is down to third position. I think pretty sure Ross Gunn took the... I think the order was 23, 16, 12 and 9 at the restart. It's now 12, 9, 23. And where's the number 16 car? Is that next up? Yeah, it is. I think it's next.
Chip?
Fifth. Lally is up to fourth.
Right, okay.
That led into the 16.
Right, now I'm... let's have it. Have we got Conor De Filippi is restored on the timing screen. So just a few ones and zeros that had gone missing for a brief moment. Action down towards the hairpin again for the DPIs. The side-by-side contact leaning on each other again down there. And that's right in behind the number 48 Cadillac. That was all going on. So was that Rossi and Bourdais that were having a little bit of side-by-side? So difficult to tell the cars in the darkness. It was, it was the number five car of Bourdais. And what was the other car involved?
The 10.
It was the 10. I thought it was Rossi. That means he's dropped back a couple of positions since the restart. Thank you, shit. I was sort of second guessing myself because he shouldn't have been behind the 48. Say again, Jeremy.
No, that's right. He was in fourth position ahead of the 48 and the
correct.
Five, right?
Yeah, and that's why I second guessed myself. Problem for Alexis, I think. Both together there now, both with damage to the right rear. It's the 12 car. It's the 12 Lexus. They've both got missing bodywork on the right rear. So that is the leader, or was the leader in GTD. Lawrence Vanto's gone through. He's going to have a puncture, I think. There goes the Aston Martin as well. Ross Gunn going into second. So there's been a little tap there. Maybe a love tap further round the circuit. Oh, that was a hit by the Pfaff Porsche. Just clipped the right rear, and that again is going to attract the attention of the stewards. And our race director straight into the pit lane, refueled, drag the bodywork off the rear of the car on the right hand side. They're having a good look around at shit.
They really are taking their time. No fuel going into the car at this point, tire only.
It was a very small splash of fuel because they hadn't long since been out the pitch here, so that was again topped up. Yeah.
Sorry, no, what I meant was the clock continued to count up and the car was not leaving, and it wasn't because the fuel probe was still attached. It was because the crew was investigating the car to make sure that it was all okay. Now the question is he going out or is he turning right to go back behind the wall?
Well,
and the answer is he's out of the pits.
If that was Zach Veach, which it was, he's going to have to come in again. He passed before the green. So Jeremy was saying there'd been a bit of a shuffle in GTD. Well, the shuffle was an illegal shuffle, dealing from the bottom of the pack. So he will have to come through again, drive-through penalty. So that again is a mistake that could have been avoided. The contact on the restart lap. Now, get a little more leeway on starts and restarts, but I wonder if, because the Lexus had already transgressed, that might say that he shouldn't have been in that place in the first place, in that position.
Alito, it's been shuffled around there in GTD. GTLM, it still knows the tail now with the Corvette ahead of the BMW and then the Porsche. Antonio Garcia ahead of Colin DeFilippi, ahead of Matthew Jaminet. And so with this one, an hour and 26 minutes remaining, that battle very much on again now. And the Corvette, they've got their track position back again. The car seems to have been running fairly well through that last stint. We worried about it. We wondered about it a bit before that because they'd fallen back and didn't seem to be making up any ground. But now they are back in the lead of this race once again for Corvette Racing.
Extraordinary how they managed to plan and scheme their way back into things. Very impressive indeed. So just to confirm that we did get the Sun Energy One back onto the lead lap in GT Daytona at that last caution. So Zach Veitch is the seventh car. Mauro Engel is the sixth car on the lead lap. Zach Veitch will have to go through the pits again. He's the seventh car on the lead lap, but he's going to lose a little more ground. Might just stay in on that lead lap. Just stay on that lead lap in GTD.
Maybe. It'll be close.
Yes.
Mauro Engel had... Excuse me, John, I'm so sorry. Mauro Engel had got the wave around, so he is back on the lead lap, but he's quite a long way back because he had not caught up to the back of the field when we went back to green. So the good news is he's on the lead lap, but he kind of needs another caution period. That Sun Energy One Mercedes number 75 to get back on terms with the other leaders in GT Daytona.
You wouldn't bet on it, like we wouldn't bet against it, would you? Colin Brown on a charge as well in LMP3. We said he got back on the lead lap. He's made use of getting back on the lead lap, Jeremy, and now he's only 0.3 seconds away from the lead. Jerome Blakemolen versus Colin Brown versus Spencer Pigot in the top three, separated by about a second in LMP3. Yes, please. Absolutely fantastic, this LMP race. LMP3 race. Shit, Adam, yeah, you're enjoying it as well. You've got to say, it's great to have Colin back. Underused talent in the last couple of years, to be fair.
Agreed.
Sorry, Shay, say again.
And now he's leading. He got around Jerome Blakemolen and somehow on that lap, and Colin Brown, the next time he crosses the start finish, will be credited as the leader of the LMP3 class. What a fight back.
Well, you said it, Shay. Watch out for fireworks when he got, when it looked like he was going to get back on the lead lap. Absolutely outstanding. Zach Veitch back in to the pits. Now, this is his drive through for overtaking before the green flag. And that will drop him further down. As Jeremy said, that's going to be close to dropping him off the lead lap. A new fastest lap in GT Daytona. 2:08.61 by the... This is a Porsche time of day now, I always reckon. And Lawrence Vanter is absolutely on it. He's really saved the best till last here, Jeremy. 2:08.61 in GT Daytona. How does that look as far as lap records are concerned?
We'd already beaten the lap record, haven't we? You're absolutely right. So the old record was 2:08.6. We hadn't quite caught up
not
to the
quite.
Record.
Two tenths off.
So we're a couple of tenths away now. 20.861 against 20.628. So just a couple of tenths of a second he needs to find if he wants to etch his name in the record books.
Wouldn't put it past him doing that either, to be honest, when Vanto gets in to this kind of mood. And he is the qualifying specialist, let's not forget. When he was winning championships with Earl Bamber, he would do the qualifying, set the car up and qualify, do the first stint. Earl would do the long stint. Larry knows where to find pace from a car. He's got 80 minutes there or thereabouts to get this car to the end. And at the moment, he is absolutely on it. As is Scott Dixon at the front of the field. He's making mid-speed of some big names here. Once again, the Cadillac Chip Ganassi Racing Team have given him a really good car, but Scott's using it very well indeed. Now 3.5 seconds since the restart out of Oliver Jarvis is another 2.7 further back, then 1.3 to Kobayashi, who's no slouch. Only driver in the 46ers last time around, Scott Dixon.
Has anybody turned a F46? I think, yeah, it's been a while. So, looking back down, I think I can't see the last 46. It has been quite a while ago. So, just tremendous, like, you know, taking full advantage of the fact that the sun has gone down, so the temperatures are even cooler. The track is clear, though, more particularly ahead of Scott Dixon. So, he is just laying down some good laps, trying to extend his advantage. So, when he does reach the traffic, which won't be very long, he'll be able to. He'd be a little bit more circumspect in picking his way through if he's got a handy lead already.
Yeah. Another one of the Blue Riband races with which we start the IMSA calendar, Rolex 24 at Daytona. Mobile 1 12 hours of Sebring, presented by Advance Auto Parts. Effectively the 36 hours of Florida, isn't it, these two races? And these are big races. These are races, Jeremy, that any pro, doesn't matter what you've won, how many championships you've won, how many big events you've won, these races, they stand out. They've got history, they've got provenance, looks good on your CV for you, for your team and for your manufacturer.
It does, and it was 46.86 last time around, this last lap, 46.85 the lap before that for Scott Dixon. How about that?
Knows how to pedal a car, that lad, doesn't he? He really does.
Yeah, he has a future ahead of him, doesn't he?
Yes. Yeah. Maybe he should think about doing this full time, to be honest. I know everybody says this, Jeremy, but you've been around the IndyCar paddock for a long time as well. A phenomenal character, lovely bloke, and the kind of relationship and the longevity of relationship that he's had with Chip Ganassi, it just really, in all honesty, it doesn't happen anymore in racing. It's almost, you know, it's almost the stuff of years gone by.
Yeah, he is ageless, it seems like, to me, Scott Dixon. Hey, by the way, we talked about Antonio Garcia a little while ago. He's just set a new fastest lap of the race, which is also, I think, is the lap record, because, yeah, we're well underneath the old lap record. 55.642 for Antonio Garcia, the leader in GTLM, just trying to stretch away from Conor DeFilippi and Matthew Jaminet. He was still only maybe a couple of tenths quicker than DeFilippi on that last lap, and Jaminet turned a 55.8, which is just a tenth away from his best lap of the race, so it really is. Yeah, the battle is very much on and being fought hard in GTLM, as always, I guess.
Yeah. Proof we needed. You only need two cars to make a race. Well, we've got three here on the lead lap. Three within 2 seconds at the moment. And you know, if you know anything, that one is not over yet. Oh, bit of drafting going on between Jarvis and, I think that was Kobayashi, right up his tailpipes as they went by one of the GT cars. Still one of the hardpoint Porsches, I think. One of the EBM cars. Prototypes clear off so quickly, don't they? Sorry, it's the Faf Porsche, my apologies, that they went by. Do you know, sorry, go ahead, Jeremy.
The number 12 car, by the way, just did, he has managed to stay on the lead lap, but it's quite a long way behind even the number 75 car now.
Just a thought, Jeremy, you're hanging it all out, running fast laps like mad, in you know, getting down to lap record pace in the leading Pfaff Motorsports Porsche, Lawrence Vanter. He's wringing the neck of that GT Daytona Porsche, and three prototypes go past him and disappear in the distance like he's chained to a post. It's, you know, you forget how quick these prototypes are until you put them with other cars. You could race a full grid of prototypes and it would look spectacular, but nothing looks better than when you've got mixed category racing. And in your head, a Porsche GT3 or a Corvette GT Le Mans cars, they're fast cars. And they are being blown away, particularly through the fast S's at the back of the circuit, because of the downforce of those prototypes. Absolutely brilliant stuff. IMSA take a bow for DPI and effectively LMDH. That's IMSA's solution. It's been successful, it is successful, and hopefully it will continue to be successful with the new manufacturers that are coming in. Acura confirmed to be staying in. Porsche and Audi on their way. And we wait to find out which GM product will be represented. And the opportunity for other manufacturers as well to come in. Some who have history, some who do not within sports car racing.
The change of position up into fourth place now is Sebastian Bourdais, car number five. He took the restart in sixth. Both he and the number 48 car managed to get around the number 10 of Alexander Rossi right at that restart. Did we see what happened, or we just saw the aftermath of it, didn't we, I think?
There was a bit of side-by-side going into turn seven, I think, from memory. Might have been turn 10. But that was already when the 10 had dropped behind, and that was Kobayashi going by Alexander Rossi Konica Minolta car. And she's got an update on that car, because it hasn't quite had the pace since the restart. Shea, what's going on?
I have the answer for you on that. It has lost pace due to the right side intercooler damage sustained when the contact happened with the 14 Lexus. So spark up the debate between you and Nick Damon once again. It's rearing its ugly head at this late stage in the race.
Right. Okay.
The penalty for incident responsibility, wasn't it, number 10 car? As you see, the LMP2 leader into the pits one more time. 307 laps completed for that car. The gap over the number 18 was just over a lap, so that'll be just less than a lap now. And the number 18 car, that's only about halfway through its stint, I think. The number 52 car did not pit during this most recent caution period, whereas the number 18 did. So that's kind of given the opportunity for the 18 car to get back onto the lead lap. I guess the 52 didn't pit during that previous caution period because they didn't want to allow the number 18 to get back on the lead lap. But because the 52 didn't pit, the 18 did. So even though it remained a lap down, it was right behind the 52 at the restart, or very close behind it at the restart. So when the number 52 car did duck into the pits, the 18 car is back onto the lead lap. That's in LMP2.
Jeremy Shaw, he's with me in the Hagerty Global Cup Broadcast Centre. In comes the Mazda of Ollie Jarvis. We'll do a quick Mazda in-race update after the hour, and we go past 9 o'clock. Shea, Adam, what's going on down at Team Mazda?
Who was it who was put into the Mazda at the end of the Sebring 12-hour in November to take it to the checkered flag and ultimately to the top step of the podium? That would be Mr. H. Ticknell, Le Mans winner in 2020, in a GTLM car, by the way, I'd just like to say, or GT Pro, but still, Harry just climbed aboard the 55 DPI, and I just got goosebumps. Come on, Lena, take it to the checker.
It's Lena Gade, of course, multiple Le Mans winning engineer and strategist.
Yeah, the strategy there is interesting because he doesn't need to come into the pits right now. It's only been 17 laps since it stopped. That included 5 laps of yellow, so he didn't need to come in now, but from here to the end they can make it on one more pit stop pretty comfortably. So just trying to, I think, even out these stops, these stints in the final stage of the race. And if you can get Jarvis out now on a fresh tyres. He was actually losing a little bit of ground to the number 60 car running in that third position before this stop, but now with not quite a full tank of fuel perhaps and a fresh set of tyres, maybe he can make up a bit of ground here on those two cars that had been ahead of him. And to cover that, Scott Dixon brings the race leading car into the pits.
73 minutes when that car came out, split that in half. That's very achievable by the 55 car that Jeremy was talking about. And when we talk about covering off, what you don't want to be doing is getting caught the wrong side of a safety car. That's why the 01 has come in now, and Shea is watching the Cadillac pit stop.
Ranger van de Zande, gold helmet and everything, into the 01 Cadillac. They're taking their time, though, not replacing the right front wheel. There might be something wrong with the right front of the suspension.
Bit of damage,
fuel
I think.
Nozzle is still attached. Yes, they're... It looks like there is a bit of damage. I thought it was a late dive into the pit lane for Scott Dixon. Fuel nozzle is out. The car is still sitting up on
its
air jacks there.
Right there.
This is it. This is second race in a row that they have lost in the dying moments to some form of damage. The nose is coming off. Oh, my goodness. Not again.
There's a little ding on the right front of that. There's a dive plane or two missing from the normally immaculate Dallara bodywork on the Cadillacs, and this, I think it's more than that. If it had just been the dive plane, I don't think they would have worried about that, but they're now looking at the right front steering and suspension. So what happened? Oh, huge hit as he was trying to get into the pit lane. Got the wrong side of one of the GT cars, and that's what caused the issue. Drifted wide. It was the BMW. It was the 25 BMW, Conor DeFilippi in second place. Scott Dixon, maybe a late call, Jeremy, for Scott, because he wasn't. It didn't look like he was on the line to come in the pit. He hadn't slowed down that much, and even coming in the way he did, he had to go across the yellow lines to get in to the pit. So covering off, as you said, that might have been just a little bit of a late call for the 01 from Chip Ganassi. And Scott didn't get the right line as he was coming into the pit lane and had to try and chop back across, which is where the BMW already was.
That's certainly what it looked like, Johnny. I think you called that exactly right.
Yeah, because he goes down the inside of the BMW to 17 and really just needs to lift a little bit and keep the car to the right-hand side. The GT cars, even the GT Le Mans cars, have a little more mechanical grip, so through the slower corners. Dixie goes up the inside, looks like he's got it, then he's back on the power, but drifts really wide, and then cuts back. The BMW barely even nudges the BMW, but it was enough to do something to the front right of Scott Dixon's Cadillac. Yeah, broken steering. That is going to take some time to fix, and that car is out of the fight. Kobayashi in the pit lane for the 48 Cadillac crew. Shea Adam, been and gone.
The only little bit of redemption that I could possibly think for the 01 machine is that they currently sit sixth on the charts, with Mike Conway not going any further in the 31 Wayland Engineering Cadillac, and the 48 that just came down the pit lane for fuel and tires for Kamui Kobayashi, as we know, having exceeded drive time and being moved to the back of the results after the race. It means that the 01 will score no fewer than fifth place points. So yeah, it's not as bad of a day as it looks on the timing charts right now. One more point at the end of the day, in effect, but it's still gut-wrenching. Ranger van de Zande, twice he's finished second in this race. He's never won it. And then Scott Dixon, never even been on the podium in this race. It was looking so good for today. Not going to happen.
You're listening to live coverage of the Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring for 2021, presented by Advance Auto Parts. It is IMSA Radio as we're getting down towards the last hour of what has been an enthralling event.
Racing on America's classic circuit. This is IMSA Radio.